The views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
So we say, we always say to black trapper party that they can do anything they want to do. We might not be back, I might be in jail, I might be anywhere. But when I leave, you remember I said with the last words on my lips, I am a revolutionary.
Revolution comes with a price tag. You a slave to a flag in a country that clearly doesn't love you when they probably never have. Told you turn the other cheek and they met it with a bat. Fucking protesting them citizens. Told you go fight in the war. Vietnam, you died good riddance. The man of the house rule took you from your siblings. Turned around a pump crack right up in your city. And they just turned all your leaders to martyrs. You was off in the war, now who was guarding your daughters? It was riots in the streets, killed Malcolm and Martin. Called the National Guard up because we ride with our guard up. And now it's blood in your guard. It's like an amendment on the plan. To you, everything that they taught you was a lie to you. See, they scared of your skin and they dying to shoot. Take the American dream and then you die to pursue.
One day it'll all make sense. If it ain't about power, then it don't make sense. But none of that money matters when you live in madness. So one day you figure out that all you got is this. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger.
For those of you who don't know,
good afternoon. You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed, of course. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines, known as USA Inc. Today's date is February 15, 2016. It is a Monday afternoon here in North Carolina. Hope that my voice finds you in relative safe surroundings and whatnot, moving behind these enemy lines. Just got past the weekend. We know lots of things happen to people on the weekend as they go out and about trying to have a good time on the weekend. I remember my clubbing days. It's been a while since I've been in a club. So, you know, young people, they like to have fun, and older people like to have fun too. But a lot of things can happen to you as they happen to me as a young man out there over the weekend. So you have to always be on your P's and Q's, as they say, have your battlefield awareness up. Today, what's on schedule for today? We are scheduled to talk to Mr. James Klingman again. He is one of the founding members of 1 Million Conscious Black Voters and Contributors, and he'll be joining us today to discuss an upcoming national news conference that they will hold on Thursday, February the 25th, just 10 days away. It will be from 9 a.m. to 12 noon, and this press conference will be held at the African American Civil War Memorial and Museum, which is in Washington, D.C. We have posted that information and linked to a press release, which was issued by 1 Million Conscious Black Voters and Contributors, for those who want to attend the national press conference. For our listeners who may be in the D.C. area, I know we got some media partners in that area as well. Now, the stated purpose of this news conference is to once again introduce the 1 million Conscious Black Voters and Contributors as a movement and inform the public on their platform planks to the national African American community to challenge the rights of states to pass laws and contradict the United States Constitution, and a whole lot more. So we look forward to speaking to Mr. Klingman today about this upcoming press conference and about some of the issues that's being raised here in their press release ahead of the press conference. I also want to get Mr. Klingman's thoughts on the members of the Congressional Black Caucus coordinating with the Black Super PAC, which deceptively uses the same name but just put a PAC on the end of it. And this is done to give the impression that all elected black leaders support Hillary Clinton's campaign for the Democratic Party's nomination. The reason I want to highlight this story is because when they first made their announcement, and I've heard of them in the past probably just wasn't paying too much attention to them, and didn't really understand at that point that, hey, this is a super PAC. And, you know, this isn't really the official Congressional Black Caucus, which has 46 members this year, or in this session of Congress. I shouldn't say session, but whatever, you know, the Congress is, whatever number has been assigned to it. This is the largest one in history. They've never had more black elected representatives in Congress than, you know, any other time in history. And that's pretty sad when you look at the fact that as a constituency, and black people collectively are a constituency here in the United States, and we've gotten relatively nothing but photo ops and whatnot out of this president, while all these other different special interest groups are getting executive orders and other movement on their issues. And so for us to have you know, the highest number ever of black congressional representatives is just a doggone shame that our issues are not being raised as they should be. The pressure is not being applied to the CEO of America to get him to pass some executive order, since, you know, the common excuse is, well, he has a Congress and the Congress controlled by Republicans, and you know they ain't gonna let him do nothing. Well, that's why you got the power of the executive branch through executive orders, and this president has shown a willingness to sign executive orders to address those interests of those special interest groups, whether it be the gay community, whether it be those people that like to torture people for information. And he's passed executive orders all throughout his presidency. And so I want to take a look at this super PAC just as, I guess, also as a way for us to delve into politics and learn how this complicated area of people activity works and how people are operating in it. And so, you know, here you got a black super PAC, and it says that it was created to get more black people in Congress. But when you look at their records, their open records on opensecrets.com, you will find that in their expenditures, that they really only contributed like $11,000 towards any elections that I have seen. And I don't know what all they were contributing to, but $11,000 is not a lot of money going towards your mission. If your mission is to get more black people elected, you would think, you know, you would have a you would think the majority of the money you're taking in, the majority of your expenses would be going towards electing these black people. But that's not the case with this super PAC. But again, we can look at this and learn from it because perhaps we need, you know, a real black super PAC that will be willing and dealing and rubbing elbows and, you know, raising money to contribute to get who we want elected. People who would be coming to our super PAC and asking us for endorsements because they see that we are attached to a very large voter base that has special interests of its own. So again, you know, we hear a lot of times, and not going to say anybody's complaint is invalid, but I understand, though, a lot of the frustration within the black community with the political process. But I have to say, some of that frustration, I would say, is because we don't know how the game is played and we ain't playing it properly. We think it just consists of us going to the polls and voting for someone, and that's it. That's it. And even if we're just voting for someone, we're not looking at their records. We're not doing our due diligence in researching who, what their connections to outside special interest groups may be. And, you know, I think that is a source of frustration, is especially when you don't know how the game is played and you're not playing it correctly, and then you're not getting the results that you want to see, you know. And so, yeah, that is frustrating. That's like me sitting down to play a board game, and then I don't know all the rules, and then I'm getting mad because everybody's doing better than me, and I don't even know how the game is played. So just lots of things. We could take that story and just use it as a teaching tool in a specific area of politics. But I do believe we are joined by our guest, Mr. James Klingman. Do we have you on the line, sir?
Yes, Scotty. How are you?
I'm not going to complain too hard, sir. Not to you specifically, but I'm just surviving behind these enemy lines as best I can, as best most of our people can do right now. But I am excited about the future. I'm excited about some of the grassroots movement that we are seeing, particularly with 1 million conscious black voters and contributors, mm-hmm. which you are a founding member of. And so, you know, I have reasons to be optimistic with the long-term view.
Yes, we all do, and we have to continue to do the work. In addition to celebrating the progress, we have to continue to work and make sure that we don't drop the ball this time.
And, you know, if I look back over history, you know, because it's Black History Month, but I study Black history all day long, every day. You know, I'm finding out something new. And, you know, speaking on the press release that 1 million conscious black voters and contributors put out ahead of its national press conference that will take place on February the 25th at the African American Civil War Memorial and Museum. So I've been, you know, just reading about black revolutionary soldiers, reading about how racist George Washington almost lost the Revolutionary War because he was a racist, and he put a ban in place that prohibited black colonists, free or enslaved, from serving in the Continental Army, and that the Continental Army was so outnumbered by the British and their allies that he had to give in and allow black people to come into the Continental Army and basically save the day and win the war. And that's just history that we don't get taught, Mr. Klingman. And when I read that kind of history, I see that our people have paid a huge investment in this country. You know, if we could rightly credit them with, this country would not even exist if not for the black revolutionary soldier coming in to save the day. So that's some of the history I've been uncovering. And you know, that kind of ties into, I titled the show because it's mentioned in your press release about, you know, black constitutional patriots. And some people will have you believe that, you know, patriots doesn't apply when it comes to black people, but that's because they don't know how much black people have invested in this land.
You're exactly right, and it's also because they don't know history, as you just implied. There are folks that we hold up in high esteem, our ancestors who can be classified as black constitutional patriots. And the first and foremost that I would mention is Frederick Douglass. If you read his writings, not just quote, power concedes nothing without a demand. Mm-hmm. We latch onto that, and that's all we say about Frederick Douglass. Just like all we say about King is, I have a dream and I've been to the mountaintop. But we should read the voluminous amount of writings by Douglass, and you'll see that he had one position on the Constitution when he was when he first was introduced to abolitionists like Garrison, and he changed his position as he learned more, mm-hmm. and he became an advocate for the Constitution when it came to the rights of black people. So it's just a matter of understanding, learning first of all, and understanding our history to a far greater extent than we're going to do it, than most of us are going to do it this month. You know, we'll learn again for the 50th time who invented what, but it won't go beyond that. Mm-hmm. So we have to take it upon ourselves, Scotty, to learn about our own people and about what they did, what they said, and how it affects us today.
Most certainly, and this is part of self-education, and also, you know, parents taking the responsibility to learn the stuff themselves, because I'm still finding out stuff. I'm 50 years old, will be 50 this year.
I am too.
And I'm still learning. I'm still uncovering new information and whatnot. And I pass that along to my grown children and pass it along to the grandchildren. So we, like Malcolm X said, we can't be relying on our enemies to educate us about ourselves and our contributions to this constitutional republic. And I feel like because we don't know that history, Mr. Kleeman, that's why so many of us don't feel like we're invested in this land, and we're so quick to leave it behind.
Yeah. And I'm glad you pointed out that some people will look at this and immediately be turned off simply because they don't know. But on the other hand, they'll be turned off because they have been programmed to believe certain things that are not true or do not fit within the actual narrative of what took place during the time of Douglas and others who cited this document, which is supposed to be the bedrock upon which this country was founded. But yet, you know, we don't want to be a part of it because we think that it does not, never did, never will apply to black people. Now, I understand all the arguments against it, with the slavery and all of that, but so did Douglas. But he sat down and he analyzed it and he studied it. And he said, well, I'll just use their own words against them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we have to do. That's all we're doing, using their own words against them. They wrote these words. We didn't.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, before we get into some of the details, is the Constitution the supreme law of the land, which is a question that is being asked by 1 million conscious black voters and contributors, and will be the subject of the upcoming press conference on February the 25th. Right now, you know, sir, obviously that, you know, this is an election year where they will elect the next CEO of USA Inc. They will also elect U.S. senators, U.S. House of Representatives, state judges, state Supreme Courts, you know, justices, executive committees. And I mean, there's a lot of focus on politics right now. And I'm starting to see, as I see every year or hear every year or around this time, not so much in non-presidential election years, but whenever there is an election year, I hear the frustration of many black people who say, you know, the vote ain't never got us free, and we shouldn't participate in this because, you know, we don't get to select who's president. And, you know, I'm sure you've heard all of the, you know, arguments against us participating in politics, but what have you been hearing the same thing, and what do you say, you know, to that sort of frustration?
Well, I certainly understand the frustration. I've been frustrated down through the years about some of the same things relative to how public policy is made and how it affects or disaffects black people. However, like Douglas, my growth and study and understanding of how I can leverage the collective will and the collective resources and the collective votes of black people to affect positive change for black people, that has led me to a position of, well, the position I take today with the 1 million, that unless we're going to change this system, then we have to figure out, or should figure out, how to win in this system. Now, you know we're not going to change it. So how do we win rather than just play when it comes to politics? My position is we have to figure out how to win. And how to win is very simple. You can see it every day if you look at this entire, you know, the system in its entirety. The collective of black people, now we're number three in population, I understand that. But man, we vote more than any other group in this country compared to our percentage of population. So why shouldn't we collectively vote as a bloc, be independent in our political thinking when it comes to party loyalty, and use that collective leverage to get some reciprocity from the system that we complain about? We know how it affects our lives. So it's not enough just to sit back and complain about it and say, well, no, no sense in doing anything. We're not going to get anything. We haven't got anything. That's true. But how do you get something? And that's what I'm advocating for, in spite of the fact that I know the system is corrupt. The system is rigged, as they say. I'm still going to fight for some reciprocity for black people. And that's what the 1 million conscious black voters is all about.
I mean, I did read that black people, for the first time in history in 2008 and 2012, first time in history that black voters, okay, and there's a distinction between black people and black voters, because the majority of black people are not black voters. But we've had a majority, the first time in history, a majority of black voters voted as a demographic more than any other group, more than Hispanics,
that's right,
more than white people, more than whatever label you want to ascribe to them. Black people turned out the most. Now, they may have turned out for symbolic reasons and were first-time voters and were just turning out because a black man was running for president. But still, though, you know, even though we haven't gotten anything from that president, well, but then how do we leverage those unprecedented numbers of black people for future elections?
That's right. Exactly. You just hit the nail on the head. We have proven our collective capacity and ability and willingness to go out and cast votes. We've proven that over the last 8 years. But what have we gotten? Okay, if the answer is nothing or very little, then our next question should be, what do we need to do now in order to get something from our collective vote? Folks already know that we can come out when we want to, and we can have a tremendous impact. So it seems logical to me that those same folks would say, okay, we have to learn from the past. We can't live in the past. Let's learn from it. What do we do now? Thus, I give you the 1 million conscious black voters and contributors.
Now, this is pretty timely with the death of Justice Antonin Scalia, who I say was a racist based off of his own words and whatnot, born in the 1930s, was appointed by Ronald Reagan the year I went into the United States military. So I'm very aware of Antonin Scalia since he got appointed by Reagan. And so now there is talk about the Constitution and whether or not this president should or will appoint. He's already made it clear that he will appoint, as per the Constitution, a nominee, or he will, you know, put forth a nominee to fill that vacant seat. The Republicans in the Senate have vowed to block it, but again, you know, here it is, you know, constitutional questions being brought up, and this is a very important appointment, more important, I would say, than recent past appointments by this president. What are your thoughts on the importance of what we're talking about here, this vacancy on the Supreme Court?
Well, the importance of it is pretty obvious, too. I mean, you have 5-4 up until the time Scalia died. It was always 5-4 for the most part. Looking at Kennedy, sometimes he would switch. But basically 5-4, and a glaring example that we can see is the 5-4 vote that was taken in 2000 to make George Bush the president.
Mm-hmm.
The Supreme Court made him president, and it was a 5-4 decision. Yeah, we had Clarence Thomas on there. But what good does that do? He voted with the five. So it is very important, considering the fact that as much as we don't want to admit it, these Supreme Court justices, usually to a large degree, will follow either their liberal bent or their conservative bent. Their Democrat party that appointed them, or their Republican party president that appointed them. You can go back in history and look at it. So that being the case, of course, as you said, this is a hugely important appointment. That's why the Republicans are saying, no, we don't want you to do it. And of course, the Democrats are telling the president, yes, you need to put somebody up. The other consideration, Scotty, I don't know if you noticed the subtlety in some of the responses by the Republicans when Scalia died. But I watch the news just constantly, and a couple of them said, this is not the right president. I'm paraphrasing. This is not the right president who should be replacing Anton Scalia, the conservative. And what they were intimating was that Barack Obama is so far to the left, and it would be insulting to them if he appointed someone to replace a guy who's so far to the right. Mm-hmm. And let me draw a comparison for you.
Mm-hmm.
What did these same fake folks say, and even black people, and myself back then in 1991, who was insulted when George H.W. Bush appointed Clarence Thomas to the seat of Thurgood Marshall?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's, he doesn't deserve to replace somebody like Thurgood Marshall.
Right.
Especially with a guy like Clarence Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're hearing the argument. Obama's too liberal to replace a guy who was so conservative, replace him on the Supreme Court. Again, history is important. You think back to 91 and see how Clarence Thomas got on, and I still call that one of the biggest tricks ever perpetrated on black people by George H.W. Bush, because he said at the time that Thomas was the most qualified person to be in that seat. Now, that's a relative thing, but that's what he said. So there are a lot of games being played with this. And, of course, politics is running the show as to what person will end up in that particular slot.
Yeah, and one of the things that I would like to remind people, though, even though this president does have a constitutional right to nominate someone, and I believe, like others believe, that his nominee deserves to get an up and down vote in the Senate. There's plenty of time to do that, and that Republicans
right.
should not be obstructionists. But also a concern of mine is that, okay, he may nominate somebody who's center right, and just to
right.
get the nomination through. You know, to uh-huh. please Republicans and whatnot, because this president, despite people on the right saying he's this, you know, liberal or so left wing, and the fact is, truthfully, he's conducted his presidency center right, not center left, and not to the left. So I have some concerns. One of the persons I heard mentioned as a possible nominee is the California Attorney General Kamala Harris, who is
yeah.
a black woman. And this
right.
black woman argued in California in a Supreme Court case that we can't ease our overcrowding like how they were being told to do. She was talking about, you know, mass incarceration in California. The Supreme Court told them they had to reduce the population of prisoners they had because
right.
it was overcrowding. That's unconstitutional, cruel and unusual punishment was what they said. She argued, or her office argued, and those people working for her argued that, well, this would deplete California of its cheap labor pool because they use
yeah.
these prisoners as slaves to do anything from fighting all of those fires that you see in California to doing any other work that they want them to do. Okay. And so I would say, you know, I've heard people say, well, I hope he nominate a black woman. Well, what good is that going to do us if he nominates a black woman who believes in practicing 21st century slavery and human trafficking?
You're right. That's the danger of us being so hung up and emotionally invested in color only, just color, which is, you know, politics is about self-interest. I don't care what color the person is.
Right.
If they're doing something and supporting black issues and causes, that's the politician I'm for. I don't care if it's right. So, because I, you know, we're just too emotionally involved in this. And, you know, just saying, well, I hope he puts a black person or a black woman or man in the seat. Now, I want to know who that black person is, because you already have one black person on there who's only black in color, not in consciousness.
Right.
So it's real important to look deeper than just the surface of these kinds of issues. There have been many names already put out there, most of whom are white guys. There's an Indian guy that is there. Loretta Lynch has been put forth. Some people even talking about Cory Booker.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why? I want to know why. What do you think these folks are going to do?
Or what they won't do.
That's what my concern is.
Or what they won't do, like, you know, in case anybody wants to look back and prosecute the Bush administration or the Obama administration. That's why, you know, that's why you put people in these certain positions. But again, Mr. Kleeman, this again goes to our education of the system. We know the system is corrupt. We know how the system works, or at least we should know how it works. And, you know, we have to master it, and we had to fight fire with fire.
That's right. And we have the intellectual capacity that is far beyond sufficient for us to do that, Scotty.
Mm-hmm.
But we just don't seem to have the collective will. That's why the 1 million is so important, bro. It's so important that we organize ourselves, as many of our ancestors have told us, you know, to do for years, and leverage our votes. Leverage our dollars so that we can get something back for them. Otherwise, as I said earlier, we're just playing politics just to play. We're not playing to win.
I would agree. Listeners, if you have any questions or comments for Mr. Kleeman today, give us a call. The studio line is 704-951-5030. The conference line is 641-715-3660. That participant code is 549032 pound. Hit *6 and 1 to signal me. You can also use our web-based flash phone to call from anywhere in the world, as long as you obviously have an internet connection and a pair of headsets. Again, we are talking to Mr. James Kleeman of 1 Million Conscious Black Voters and Contributors. We're going to take a short station identification break, and then when we come back, we will get into this upcoming press conference. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. We'll be right back.
This is Ron Hayes with Hood News, and you're listening to the Black Talk Radio Network. Stay tuned. Our people are very serious about not being very serious.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com. And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Our guest joining us today is Mr. James Kleeman. Please check out the website, IamOneOfTheMillion.com. Again, that is IamOneOfTheMillion.com, to find out more information about becoming a part of the movement, 1 Million Conscious Black Voters and Contributors. So, Mr. Kleeman, y'all have a press conference coming up on February the 25th. This press conference will be at the African American Civil War Memorial and Museum, which is in Washington, D.C. And its title is the U.S. Constitution, the Supreme Law of the Land. I have linked to the press release for those listeners that want to check it out. But in this, you're asking, or you all are asking, you know, a very important question that I think needs to be answered, because there are a number of criminal laws and penalties that are on the books, primarily concerned with the drug war, that I would contend and other people would contend are unconstitutional, not to mention, you know, some of the other, you know, state laws and other laws that are in conflict with the U.S. Constitution. So can you talk to us a little bit about this topic in this upcoming press conference?
Yes. I want to just harken back to your point about California on the prison. That'll give us a good example or a good starting point for this press conference. If you notice on our website, plank number 18 is titled Amend the Amendment. And we're suggesting, I think I talked about this on your show a few weeks ago.
Yes, sir.
To remove the clause or the sentence in the 13th Amendment that applies to people who are duly convicted. And that is connected to what you just laid out in California. So we need to be aware of the 13th Amendment and the plank in the 1 Millions platform that says we need to remove that. Well, we're going to talk about that at the press conference as well. The other thing about the press conference is based on a different, not a different, but relatively esoteric interpretation of the Constitution. And what we did, knowing that some of our very people are going to say, oh no, this is, you know, you can't support the Constitution, that's, you know, anathema to anything that black people should do. We looked at its history and found, like I said, Frederick Douglass, but in more recent history, and all of us have heard these words that came out of the mouth of Martin Luther King, another icon that black people love and celebrate. You know, in his I Have a Dream speech, he said, we have come to our nation's capital to cash a check. When the architects of our republic wrote the magnificent words of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, they were signing a promissory note to which every American was to fall heir. Every American. That's black folks too. These guys, MLK, Frederick Douglass, talked about the very things that we're promoting at this press conference, and, you know, in addition to other aspects, we have 19 black planks now. But, you know, if we reflect back on folks that we hold in high esteem and really read all of their words, we'll see that this is not the first time that black folks have come to this conclusion about the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. You know, Martin went on to say, I have a dream that one day this nation will live up to the true meaning of its creed. So he was calling them on the carpet. And we yelled and screamed, oh, this is great. I have a dream speech. We recite it every year. But we don't pull out the parts that deal with this constitutional advocacy that he was referring to during that speech. So that's where we're coming from with the press conference. We're going to introduce ourselves to the nation, to the world, really, because we're expecting media there from all over. And we're going to emphasize this whole notion of black people being ignored, being disenfranchised, being mistreated, having no justice under the very document that is the foundation of this country.
You know, I can just, we have a program on that comes on Friday nights called Race Treaty. And, you know, Race Treaty's premise is looking at solving these problems through an international framework and, you know, promoting human rights as opposed to civil rights, something that Malcolm X talked about a lot. And so I can see some people might say, you know, they may say, well, you know, human rights are more than constitutional rights and whatnot. So I should be pushing for human rights and not constitutional rights. But the Constitution actually says that the United States government is supposed to be implementing those human rights that they have signed in these treaties. So again, it comes back to using the Constitution, their own words against them, as leverage for your human rights in adhering to international human rights laws according to the treaties this government has signed.
Well, the treaties as well as the Declaration. What does it say about inalienable rights given by our Creator? That's human rights.
Right, that's true.
So, you know, the reference is there.
And that this government doesn't have, you have certain rights that are endowed upon you by your Creator, meaning a supreme being. Therefore, they are not subject to man's laws.
There you go, bro. There you go. So we can be, you know, we can pontificate about this, and we can be intellectual about it, and we can have conversation. We can bring in all kinds of angles and all that. But the more we do that, the more complicated it becomes. We need to keep this thing simple. And because we haven't kept it simple, you know, we have missed a lot of the very important things that pertain to what most of us are fighting for.
Now, in this press conference, again, because this is one of the years where a lot of focus is on presidential politics with these different nominees. And again, I just want to state for the record that I am part of one of the million. I just mailed off my voter registration form to change it from a party to non-affiliated here in North Carolina. And that is one of the criteria that you all are asking for, is that we be non-affiliated unless it is for the purpose of voting in a state primary where, you you have to belong to one party or the other. In North Carolina, I don't have to do that. I could just ask for whatever ballot I want to vote in whatever primary I want. So, but I just wanted to put that out there, is that this is not a this is not an organization or a movement that seeks to affiliate itself with any of the two major parties like the Republicans or the Democrats, but a movement, just the start of getting black people, black voters in particular, to start, you know, operating as a voting bloc. All right.
That's right.
So I just want to put that out there. But you mentioned.
And I would add to that, Scotty, another reason for it. I don't know if you saw the news last night on CNN. Bob Schieffer was on. Well-respected, I would say not biased in terms of parties. He said the Republican Party, in his opinion, is, what word, what term did he use? Falling apart. And if it keeps going that way, it's not going to exist anymore. And he said the Democrats, because they can only put up one person, really, one viable person to run for president, is really a weak party as well, or non-inclusive party. So what he was saying is that both parties are on their way out because there are more independents now, more people who are willing to be independent than they are in these two parties. So that's something we have to keep in mind. And again, if black people don't start voting independently, I'm not talking about join an independent party, but think independently when you cast your votes and understand how the game is played and cast your votes as a bloc and use that bloc to leverage reciprocity from any candidate who wants your vote.
Right. You know, I want to use another example of why 1 million, you know, is so needed for us to have a framework for communications, and as we, you know, look to influence politics, the right. political arena. And, you know, for example, here in North Carolina, yes, the NAACP is under strong leadership, with the, Reverend Barber. All right. He's been having up Moral Mondays, and he's been mobilizing a lot of people in this state on a lot of issues. But still, though, yeah. I would not be looking to the NAACP as producing a voter guide or telling me, you know, they're supposed to operate that way. And some of them probably in some states do, but I haven't seen it here in North Carolina. So what I'm trying to say is I see here in the state, and just in this state, a need for a black voter network so that we can be educated on what's on the ballot and who we should be voting for. For example, they just changed the rules in terms of how these Supreme Court justices get elected. All right. Now they changed it so that if once a Supreme Court justice 8-year term is up, he doesn't run in another open election. What you do is you vote to either keep him on the job, or you vote no and say we want him gone. If you vote no to say he's gone, then the governor gets to appoint somebody, and then an election will be held, a more general election to fill that position. This is something that new that they passed just last year. So anyway, I look up. There's one guy who is under that special classification. Let me pull it up right quick. Now, I did some quick research on this guy, because wouldn't you agree that a Supreme Court, state Supreme Court position is an important position, Mr. Klingman?
Of course it is.
Okay. So I did research on this guy. His name is Robert H. Edmonds, Jr. He got an award from the Corrupt Drug Enforcement Agency. So just based off of that, I should suspect that this guy supports the drug war if he's getting awarded by the Drug Enforcement Agency. Okay. That was in 1990. In 2012, you had some political science professors come up with a formula, because this is a nonpartisan right race, so we can't say, you know, oh, he's a Republican or he's a Democrat or he's a Libertarian. So they come up with this formula based on who's giving money to their campaigns, who they have donated money to, and if they have served on lower courts, what type of rulings had they issued to determine whether or not they conservatives, liberal, whatever labels you want to subscribe. So this person right here, they say, is on the right wing. He's a conservative. Now, there is no way right now outside of my immediate family of black voters that I can pass along this information. I can post it on Facebook, but there's no guarantee the people that need to see it in North Carolina is going to see it and say, hey, this judge, Robert H. Edmonds, he's up for what they call in retention. We should vote no, not to retain this guy because of, you know, the history I just cited. And we should be looking, you know, to get somebody else elected to that position. So vote no. And there's just no apparatus for us to do that as a black voting bloc here in North Carolina. So that's why I see the need of the organization which you and others are creating, the 1 million, you know, black conscious voters and contributors.
Yes, just like our movement is national. We have done analyses on several levels that tell us that our national template for this movement is also applicable on a statewide movement or even on a local movement.
County-wide.
It's all about numbers. It's all about numbers, Scotty. It's all about leveraging. It's all about voting as a bloc. So I don't want your listeners to think that we're just looking at national elections. You can use the same strategy on a local level. What I'm recommending to people in states and cities who want to use this template is to become a member of the I Am One of the Million. But use those, you know, go out and recruit people in your state, in your city, and come up with a block of voters who are willing to stay together, not break ranks, and use that as leverage to get your local officials elected as well as your state officials. This is not difficult. Like I said, we just lack the will to get out and do this because we're following certain prescribed procedures by folks who are really not thinking on the collective or not working for the collective of black people. They're working for themselves. Now, I highly respect Brother Barber in North Carolina with his state position with the NAACP, but I do not, let me reemphasize that, I do not respect the national NAACP and its so-called leadership. Because while they run around the country decrying voter suppression and all of this, they allow that same voter suppression and voter ID laws and all that to be incorporated in their local branches. They have even supported voter suppression in their various branches around the country, including the one I worked for 10 years in. So I know what I'm talking about. So while I appreciate the local folks, that's where all the work gets done anyway with the NAACP on the local level. I appreciate them. But I'm telling people, you can do what you want to do. But if it were me, I wouldn't follow the national organization around the corner.
Yeah, and I have always said that, you know, the national NAACP has and deservedly so has the ire of many black people as we look at their corporate contributions from the
very corrupt. I just say it like it is. They're corrupt.
Yeah, they're corrupt.
And I know that Brother Barber is on the national board, but I'm not accusing everybody.
I understand,
I'm
saying
the ones that I've worked with on the national level, from Brock to Brooks and on down. And somebody like Barber or others on their board need to make some changes in that structure in Baltimore.
But I'm just saying this to say this is why we need new organizations, you know, that is tied in to, you know, 1 million conscious black voters and contributors. So because, yeah, I mean, we have these national organizations, but they have become corrupted or they're ineffective. And we need to change that dynamic.
I'm so glad you said that because I want people to look at the 1 million as, you know, in an independent way. We stand alone. And to my knowledge, you help me if I'm wrong, we are the only organization that is working full time on a volunteer basis thus far for the collective of black people. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about minority this and running around here talking about we're going to help all people. We cannot help all people until we help ourselves. So, you know, I want people to look at the 1 million through that lens and ask yourself, is this an organization I want to be a part of? Is this something among all the things we have on our website? Is there something on that website that I can get involved with? This is not a dictatorial movement. No one person says it's the way it's going to be. We invite every member to give input. Those planks that you see weren't written by one person or one group. They were written by individual members of the movement. So I really want folks to look at us in that regard and through that particular lens.
Lastly, I would like to touch upon with you, we won't spend a whole lot of time on this, but I mentioned to the listeners that I want to focus on this story about this black super PAC called the Congressional Black Caucus PAC, which has named itself after the real Congressional Black Caucus and what I feel like is an intentional deceptive way to make you think that all black elected representatives are supporting the same people that this black super PAC is supporting. And in this case, they're supporting Hillary Clinton. And it's not so much to call attention, although I have already done that, But to call attention to, you know, this black super PAC, if it's supporting Hillary Clinton, it's no way that it could have the interests of black people first and foremost in their mind to support someone with a record of harming black people. Not just in the 1990s, but as running point in Libya in 2011, where all those black people were getting slaughtered by the Arab militias under the direction of the United States government. All right. And so, but their structure, I was looking at their structure. They say that they were created to elect more black people. And then not only just black people, but any representative that is working positively on black issues. Because you might have a white representative like the guy of Tennessee, Mr. Cohen, who represents a primarily black district. All right. And so you have those cases like that. But when I'm looking at their expenses report, I'm looking at who's donating to them. This is the very corruption that we see a lot of people talking about in terms of how these super PACs and money is corrupting the political process. So here we have a black super PAC who has only donated in 24, in this particular cycle, $11,000 to get black people elected, or black people, or people who are non-black but are working on policies that are important to black people. I mean, there, I'm like, man, this is like, I mean, damn, this executive director Benjamin Branch is getting paid way more money than they are actually giving towards electing black people. And so, but again, these are the type of entities that I feel like that we need to have in place, and what I hope that 1 million black conscious voters and contributors will grow into, to where we have black super PACs and whatnot, but that are super PACs for the people and not super PACs for the corporations and the special interest groups. I mean, because they've taken money from corporations that are involved in prison slave labor, have very poor records in employment discrimination, just all kind of problems. But yet they giving money to this black super PAC who apparently is rubbing elbows with real elected black members of Congress to push the interests, not of black people, but of these people that's giving them the money. And see, this is again of us playing, but we not playing to win. And so do you see in the future of us needing such an entity? Because this is how they playing the game.
Yeah. Well, Scotty, I'm pleased to inform you that that's part of our work as we speak, to have our own pack. We have a lot of work going on behind the scenes. We're not out here trying to find the nearest microphone and the nearest camera, or go to lunch with one of these candidates and think we're doing something. We're actually working. That's part of our work, as well as developing an endowment and a foundation through which black people can pool our resources and build the kind of economic future that we need to leave here for our children. So we're doing many things. That's why I encourage people to go to the website, check it out. If you want to get involved, then you do that. We're not trying to tell anybody to stop doing what they're doing and all that. If you feel like you want to be involved, that's fine. And you can get on our conference calls. You can call me and others and find out what's going on behind the scenes. We'll let the public know when it's time. Because we're not out here trying to be boastful and
right.
This and that. You know, we're doing the work. And that takes time, especially when you all volunteers. Right now, but we're moving steadily to the point to where we can get beyond just having volunteers and have some staff.
Right.
But this whole pack thing, I didn't know anything about this until you sent it to me. And I didn't know it wasn't the CBC. But I'll say one thing, with the amount of money they're talking about, it's a pittance compared to what super PACs have.
So that told me
something right there. But I really didn't know anything about this until you sent it to me.
Right. And actually, I was doing some quick accounting, and hell, they spent out more than they actually taken in this year. So that makes me ask the question of where is this money coming from and who is it going to and why? These are the questions that we need to ask. But again, when people become frustrated with the system or they become frustrated with a black super PAC endorsing what I call her a white supremacist, all right, because of her record, but a Hillary Clinton. Well, this is why. This is why. This is how things are done in Washington, D.C. right now. Like it or not, super PACs are legal. And so if they're legal and we are seeing the undue influence they're having on elections, well, then it stands to reason that then we need our own super PAC.
There you go, bro. And I would offer the $1 million as an alternative to all this corruption that you see, all of these shenanigans that you see, all of this trying to be on front street and be on stage and speak for black people and all this other nonsense that we see from politicians as well as talking heads, and compare us, put us down beside those groups or those persons that you complain about. We subscribe to the clean glass theory. We are the clean glass. We're going to put our glass down beside anybody else's glass. If that's a dirty glass, we know which one you're going to drink out of. It's going to be ours. So we invite you to take a look. Go to IamOneOfTheMillion.com. Get involved if you're so inclined. It's a whosoever will, let them come movement.
Yes, sir. Thank you again for joining us, Mr. Klingman. And I just want to remind the listeners, if you're in the D.C. area and you're able to attend, that the National News Conference, again, this is being held by 1 Million Conscious Black Voters and Contributors. The news conference will be Thursday, February the 25th from 9 a.m. to 12 noon. It will be held at the African American Civil War Memorial and Museum. That address is 1925 Vermont Avenue, Northwest, Washington, D.C., and that zip is 2001. I hope that, for those of us who are unable to attend, I hope that someone will record the press conference.
It will be recorded.
Okay, great. So we can help distribute that and, get
it out.
We're
even talking about doing it live on Periscope. I'll let you know.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Klingman. Did you have anything in closing you would like to leave with the listeners today? And thank you again for spending your time with us to discuss these important issues.
I appreciate the opportunity. I would just say to anybody who wants to talk with me, you can go to my website, blackonomics.com, and click on bio. My phone number is there. You can also send me an email. I'd be happy to talk to you about anything I've said today.
All right. Well, keep up the great work, Mr. Klingman, and as you are already doing, keeping me informed so that I can keep our listeners informed. Because, again, I'm optimistic. You all, the movement has given me reason to be an optimist instead of an internal pessimist all the time. Because it's bad out there, brother. It's bad out there for our people.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate the work you do, Scotty. Thanks a lot.
All right. You have a good day, sir.
All right, you too.
All right, that was Mr. James Klingman. Again, check out the website, IamOneOfTheMillion.com. IamOneOfTheMillion.com. Only looking for 2% of black people here in the United States, because everybody is not conscious. We're all on different levels of consciousness, so not to put anybody above anyone else. I don't mean it that way. But, the goal is to get at least 1 million voters. All right. 1 million black voters want to stick together as a voting bloc. 1 million contributors who will contribute at least $20 a year, more if you can, so that we can start creating things like black super PACs and, playing the game like it's supposed to be played. All right. Leveraging things how they are in our favor, because I have to agree, I try to say pending revolution, but let's just keep it real. Black folks ain't ready to go out there and start no revolution. They are not organized. They are not equipped, not prepared to produce a successful revolution so we could set up a black free state where we're not preyed upon and earmarked for 21st century slavery and human trafficking and whatnot. And so since we are not, since nobody is serious about a revolution, then we need to be doing whatever we can within the framework of this current system and, you know, becoming involved in every area as a master of that particular area. And that, we just have to be honest, people. We have not been masters in this area of politics. When I look at the Jewish community, white people who classify themselves as Jews are in a minority in this country, but they have the most, I would say probably the most, they are the most influential black of voters in this country. I mean, you're really doing something right when you're able to get $1 billion a year given to non-U.S. citizens in this, you know, in Israel. You're able to get that delivered for your group. You're doing something right. You're doing something. So what is it that they doing? And is what they doing so difficult that we can't do it? Anything anybody else can do, I feel like I can do as well. If I study, if I learn the rules, if I study the nuances, that I can be just as successful in doing what somebody else is doing. I can compete. And so for whatever reasons, and I know some of those reasons is because our political organizations like the Black Panther Party. When we look at the organization that Malcolm X was setting up for African American, the Organization for Afro-American Unity, which of course was going to leverage politics. So every time we have set up something like that, it has been targeted and it has been destroyed by the United States government and shadow governments and whatnot. But just because we have had those setbacks doesn't mean we had to stay back and that we, you know, should stop working in those particular areas. No, we need to pick up the baton and continue to race in those particular areas. Don't give up just simply because they murdered, you know, our leaders or they're destroyed whatever organization back in the 60s. Well, no, it's time to learn, look at the past, learn from the mistakes, and then recreate that path if they were on the right path and stand guard to, you know, the attacks that we know will be coming. So, you know, I'm just not looking for any excuses on why we should not be succeeding in anything we put our hand to. Again, if we get the right information, get the right training, and we work together as a collective, I can't see any reason for making any kind of excuses. We can acknowledge the realities and the difficulties, but we can't let those become excuses as to why. Cause it's past time, people. It's past time that we transform this battlefield and we start getting some victories on this battlefield, because our children and our grandchildren and in some of our cases our great grandchildren are dependent upon us, man. I just don't want to leave the way things are today. I don't want it to be like that tomorrow when my grandsons and granddaughter, you know, get up in age. So I just got to do whatever I can do. All right, Tando Radio Show will be coming up at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. Hope that you will check them out. They will be talking about Forex training, the FX Forex market trading, and also discussing current events. That's coming up at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. I will be back on air tomorrow at 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern. I don't think we have any guests scheduled for tomorrow, but I certainly will check on that. So until tomorrow, recognize the fact that you live behind enemy lines is Battlefield USA. Casualties are being created every day. And it's not going to get better by itself. All right. And that we have to not only survive this battlefield, but we have to start stringing together some victories towards winning this war, man. Tired of just surviving. Tired of just making it. I'm ready for some winning. So I hope that you want to win on this battlefield too, and that you will develop your battlefield skills and awareness so that you don't become a casualty and we start creating casualties on the other side. With that said, peace and blessings to all. See you tomorrow.